Return to Camp Blood, episode 21, The Man in the Latex Mask. This episode is brought to you by FridayThe13thFranchise.com.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend, now he's coming for me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Warren, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doing the biggest stay here.
Never come back again.
Today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, E.
What's up, y'all?
And Oz.
What's happening, everybody?
Yeah, Eric's a fucking douchebag. He's not here because family is more important than our podcast.
What bullshit. The fuck, yo?
No, it's cool.
Priorities, man. You got to get that shit straight.
Hey, man, this is the first normal episode that anybody's missed so far. So I think we're doing all right.
True indeed.
So, as you may have heard, we have some new intro music, and, you know, at the back end of this, there'll be some new outro music, although it sounds pretty similar. Anyway, so, you know, if you have listened to the show for any amount of time, you have noticed a great increase in the quality of our audio. And that's because after several episodes, we got new equipment and all that. But, you know, our music stayed the same. And that was really just some stuff that I whipped up in a couple minutes after searching around in Computech.com for some royalty-free music. And, you know, several weeks ago, this guy followed me, and I followed him back on Twitter. And he tweeted me this song that he had done. It was a... You know, Friday the 13th, Welcome to Camp Blood, I think it was, that's what it was called. But anyway, I liked it so much, I tweeted him back. I was like, hey, it'd be cool if you made a custom version of this for our show. And I, you know, I kind of thought, I was only joking, really, but he was like, all right. And I was like, cool.
Much appreciated, dude.
Yeah. And his name's the Downriver Rat, and you can find his stuff at thedownriverrat.com. And it's sad that Eric is not here tonight to talk about this next topic that I wanted to get into before we really started the episode. And that is the death of Wes Craven, which you guys know happened several weeks ago now. Yeah. I don't even know what to say about it. I mean, we lost Betsy Palmer and Christopher Lee earlier this year. And this has just not been a good year for the horror community at all.
They say that shit comes in threes, man. And golly, fucking hell of a three to pick.
Hopefully we got a ways to go before we get to any more threes, because it's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. And, you know, back when I was a kid... You know, in addition to watching a bunch of the Friday movies, you know, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies were right there next to them. You know, I watched those movies probably just as much as I watched the Friday movies. And so I've grown up watching Wes Craven films, man. And yeah, it sucks to know that there's not going to be another Wes Craven film ever to come out.
Shit. All right.
There's not much you can say about it. It's a bummer, man. It is a total fucking bummer.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I like you, I grew up watching, you know, Wes Craven movies, and I mean, I remember a birthday party we had a bunch of guys came over, and we it was first that we had, none of us had ever seen Nightmare on Elm Street before, and it was on cable, and we watched the Nightmare on Elm Street, and none of us motherfuckers went to bed that night. We, I think I didn't sleep for a week, to be honest with you. Everybody was convinced that fucking Freddy was going to come after us in our dreams.
Had to get a stockpile of Hypnosil and shit.
Yeah. I remember the first time that I showed Allie, you know, former co-host back on episode one.
Still disappointed.
Allie.
Tell her I said so.
Hey, man, she said she might be making a comeback soon, so we'll see. But anyway, I remember she was a little girl, a little thing, man, when I first showed her the Nightmare film that was 3D. I don't remember which one it was. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And the way that I explained it to her was, hey, if you put these glasses on, Freddy's going to come out of the TV. And that was totally the fucking wrong way to explain 3D to a little kid. She was not happy about that explanation.
Completely ruined the experience.
Yeah, yeah. She refused to wear the glasses. And I'm sure the movie sucked because you can't even hardly see what's going on.
Horrible.
I mean, not that with the glasses on, it was much better. You know, that 3D is horrible. But so yeah, we just wanted to take a few minutes to sort of talk about Wes Craven and you know, rest in peace, sir. Yep.
Thanks for the nightmare.
That's yep, right.
Definitely.
So now that you guys are sufficiently bummed out, I wanna take things up a notch a little bit. So remember a couple episodes ago I said that you know, if you really hated the show and you really thought we deserved the 1-star review to go ahead and, you know, be truthful with us in the review, and that's fine. You can hate us all you want. Well, the guy who did give us a 1-star review, he, after hearing that episode, and I think that was our part 5 episode, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
He heard, quote unquote, through the grapevine that,
I listened to
we were talking about it and that I asked for an explanation for why the 1-star. And so he obliged me. And so I just wanted to take a few minutes to, I don't know, read through this real quick and point out where he got some things right in the critiquing of the show, because there are a few valid points in here. But I also wanted to read it because he was such a fucking douchebag about it.
No kidding, man.
We won't name names or anything. But,
Jim Elliott.
We asked for
his initials are J.E.
I'll just say a disclaimer here. I don't know that to be true, but that's how we're going to treat this. Like, Jim Elliott gave us a rating on iTunes. It's probably not him, but it's fun to pretend.
Nobody else has been to us like that.
A D-bag.
Big old douche bag nozzle. Of D.
Good old douche nozzle.
That sounds awful.
It does. All right, so I'm just going to get right into reading this, and I'm not going to take too terribly long on this because I know you guys have been waiting a while for this part 5 special. The title of this review is Update, I Don't Like It, Here Is Why.
Subtitle, 1-star.
Yeah. I was told the host asked for an explanation for the 1-star rating, so here it is. I love these movies, so I tried this podcast for 3 episodes. It was awful. I normally wouldn't take the time to slam these dorks. I take offense to that, sir. I am not a fucking dork.
We're nerds. Get it right, asshole.
That's right. But a 5-star rating was so misrepresentative of the content that I had to leave a review. Let's start with the hosts. Okay. Between the awful theories and continual barrage of hack jokes, I don't know what makes the podcast more appealing. I would say that these guys are dumb, but they have a unique blend. It is equal parts a complete lack of self-awareness and unfounded confidence that probably classify these fellows as closer to special than just dumb.
Oh, that's nice. A retarded joke. Way to go, champ.
I know.
Feel better about yourself?
Way to hit the low-hanging fruit, sir. I don't know. What do you guys think? Are our theories are our theories awful? I mean, granted, I know that some of them, at least the ones that I've brought to the table, may be far-fetched, but dumb. I don't know.
I think far-fetched is fair because, in all honesty, you know, the continuity in some of these movies is lacking. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out ways to tie it all together to where the shit makes sense. When it's not always going to be possible to do that. So, but you know what? We're having fun with it. I mean, it's not to be taken seriously. I mean, if you're listening to our show and you're taking it seriously, then you're really missing the whole part, the whole gist of the show.
It may classify you as closer to special than just dumb.
Oh, and I'm gonna blame E on the continual barrage of hack jokes. What? Those are normally his fault.
Wait a minute.
Hey, man.
Wait. All right.
Be that as it may, most of them are funny.
Exactly. That's what I was gonna say.
It's like inside jokes.
We get the stupid one liners in there occasionally, and then it's.
I'm a big Freddy fan too, so the one liners are kind of part of my personality.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said those are your fault.
Fair enough. I will accept that.
All right. Let's talk about the most unintentionally entertaining part of this podcast, which occurs about every 20 seconds. Well, shit, if you're being entertained every 20 fucking seconds...
we're doing something right.
Yeah. Inevitably, one of these guys says something completely unfunny and or lacking of any intelligence, but in typical Family Feud fashion, the rest of the group either hurls some fake laughs, which I assure you, when I laugh on this show, it's not fake. I really think the shit is funny.
Same here.
Yeah. It happens. Our sense of humor is kind of warped. So something that maybe not shouldn't be funny to some people is usually hysterical over here. So,
or proudly supports the idiotic theory and hails it as a great insight. Now, I don't know of any time where we had some stupid theory and you guys just agreed. In fact, I know of several times where I've, at least for me, where I've come up with some off the wall shit and you guys are like, no, dude, you're fucking wrong.
I mean, yeah. There's been a few instances where just, well, what about this? And then everybody else will chime in. And, you know, if it makes some sense, then, you know, we'll kind of back it up and have some reasoning behind it. But if not, we'll pick our shit apart as quickly as anybody else's. So,
yep. All right, now here's this next sentence or two is probably the most accurate, I would say, if he was only listening to early episodes. Calling the interviews awkward is an understatement. The guests are usually equally as dull as the hosts, who clearly write one question and demonstrate their lack of social skills by taking weird long pauses before trying to come up with a follow-up question to bore us with.
That is complete bullshit. I don't write anything down, sir.
I have written a couple of things down, but for the most part.
Yeah, if you listen to, like, say, our first couple community spotlights, especially the one where it was just me, like, I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. I've never interviewed somebody before. So I am sure that it did come off, you know, as being less than fucking professional. And that's fine, fair. That's fair enough, sir. Fair enough. I'll give you that one. But as for the awkward pause, I fucking edit out all the awkward pauses. He continues with, when someone from one of the films is being interviewed, the fanboy reaction and lack of questions results in something similar to an unfunny version of the Chris Farley show from the early 90s SNL. I'm okay with being compared to Chris Farley, believe it or not.
He was a comedic genius.
As long as it's not Beverly Hills Ninja Chris Farley, I'm cool with it.
And so the fanboy reaction, again, we're not professionals. So, yeah, when I got Ari Lehman on the phone, I'm geeking out the whole fucking time. It just so happens with Ari, I didn't have time to verbally geek out with him because he likes to carry on a story. We didn't get a lot of questions, and that's cool.
Yeah, and the fact that he was took the time out of his day to, you know, he was on his way to band practice and decided to give us a few minutes of time, you know? Hey, mm-hmm. We're, like you said, you know, we are as excited to talk to some of these people as anybody else out there would be.
Anyway, let me finish this up, because you're right. We don't need to spend the whole time on this. But I did think these last couple sentences were great, so, and I wanted to put them in here for posterity's sake. So, if you want to get an insight into the conversations that occur at the methadone clinic after a screening of a Friday the 13th movie, tune in and listen to an episode of Return to Camp Dud. There's your explanation. Now I'm going to continue not caring about this awful podcast. We are so fucking awful that you felt the need to come back and fucking write, you know, an essay on why you hated us so much.
And now he seems to continue not caring about this awful review.
All right, so tonight we're gonna delve into some of these what was the words that he
awful theories that
it was yes. Idiotic theory.
Oh. No, he said awful, and he called us idiots or some shit like that. Whatever.
So in honor of this asshole, we're gonna come up with another one.
Yes, and in honor of our 1-star review, here is another awful theory that he could bitch about when he puts in his next review, because you know he's listening.
And it'll be under a different freaking name, I'm sure.
Don't give him any ideas, man.
He's already doing it.
Well, I mean, he edited his original review. He didn't add another one.
Well, that's because he don't have the nuts enough to...
Anyway, tonight I kind of want to talk about the idea that Tommy and Roy might have been in cahoots with each other. And like... I know it's an awful theory.
Unsubstantiated.
And yes, highly.
But it's fun to debate.
Yeah, and you know, like we normally say on this show, this is all speculation because speculation is fucking fun. And preemptively, I'm going to say that most of this discussion will probably disregard any of the story that comes after part 5, you know, because we haven't seen it yet. All right, so Roy seems to be sort of afraid of seeing dead bodies, and I mean, I understand.
Great career choice.
Well, I understand that the first dead body that he sees is supposed to be his son.
That's what I was about to say. Go ahead.
We don't know that was the first dead body he's seen. I think he was just nervous when
Well, I meant the first dead body in the movie.
Right, right. I think he just, well, when you get called to the place you know your kid's at, you're a paramedic, obviously the first thing you're going to do is be panicking. You know, you're going to be worried that it's your kid. And then when he shows up and he's walking in there into the backyard and he sees Vi, he sees Reggie, and he don't see, I mean, you can't miss him. He ain't there.
But I mean, I'm just looking at like the dude that's working with him. The dude that's working with him doesn't say like, "Hey, Roy, you've never had this problem before. What the fuck, buddy?" No, the dude is like acting like
he says, "Come on, Roy, get your hands dirty."
Yeah.
And honestly, that is the most realistic part of it, because I know several paramedics, firefighters, what have you, and that is that is how they'll act. Now, maybe not in front of the public.
Well, like Roy or?
No, like the dude, come on. I mean, they wouldn't say that in front of the people there, but that would be, that wouldn't shock me at all to hear something, because I hear quite a bit of things like that from paramedics and I hope I don't piss anybody paramedics off that are listening, but from what they see, I mean, they're just, what's the word? The shock valve is just not there for that, because they see the shit all the time. So
desensitized is what you're looking for.
Desensitized. That's exactly the word I'm looking for, because when they show up on something, I mean, it's to you and me or somebody else out there who doesn't see it all the time. I mean, we'd, you know, be freaking out or puking, whatever. But to them, it's, you know, it's no big deal. I mean,
I find it hard to believe that if Roy had been an EMT there for any length of time, that the dude, you know, if this was a constant problem for Roy. And I mean, again, I understand that he's looking at his son and shit. But like you said, you know, he's desensitized, at least in some capacity. So I feel like, you know, I'm supposed to believe that Roy is over here hacking up motherfuckers when the dude that's been working with him for however long is like, "Yo, bitch, get your hands dirty." I don't know. I can't
I think you're looking at it the wrong way. He's not freaking out or nervous or skittish or whatever because of seeing the scene. It's who the scene is. It's his son. You know, I mean, it would be totally different. EMT, whatever, if you're used to seeing that every day, but then when you see it, it's your own child. I mean, that's totally different.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, again, though.
But I mean, if he thought that much of Joey, I mean, why'd he knock up the mom and then take off? But that's a totally different conversation. But, fucking deadbeat dad.
I know. Fuck you, Roy.
Part five special.
That's why he was in hiding, because he was hiding from child support.
What a dick.
You know he had benefits.
But, I mean, it's weird that the next time you see Roy, you know, without his Jason getup, taking out a body, he's fucking almost, like, laughing about it. So, I mean, maybe
course,
you're right.
Because he did it.
Maybe.
Hey, Sheriff, you talking to me? Oh, I thought you were talking to me. Sorry.
It's
a beautiful day, isn't it?
As far as that, like, the whole thing about him being desensitized, I like Oz's point about that being his kid, and even with the desensitized thing, it'd be a different thing. But also, do you really have any, is there any, like, indication of how long he's been doing it? I mean, just kind of looking at the angle that maybe it kind of grossed him out, the idea beforehand of it handling a body and stuff.
I mean, I'm just going.
Never really say.
I'm just going on the assumption that this is not, you know, he's not a new guy on the job.
That's the way I kind of took it the same way.
Yeah. He also, like, as far as him not having an issue like handling any of the dead bodies later in the movie, at this point, I mean, assuming that this whole thing starts, you know, that he's never done this before, everything happened with his son. I mean, you know, he's completely lost his shit at this point, so his mind's not functioning the same anyway. So,
I mean, that's a fair point. And, you know, I mean, here's where, you know, I'm going to agree with your great insight.
oh, fake laugh.
That's my fake laugh, asshole.
Was that Peter Griffin?
No.
All right, so you know, I know at the beginning I said I wanted to talk about the idea of that Tommy and Roy might have been cahoots, and the scene where I think that really sets that shit off is the scene in which you see Roy's demise. So we see the mask is off, and what the fuck is Roy wearing underneath his mask? A latex hood. It seems pretty fucking weird to me that back in the mid-80s, in a time before Amazon, that it would have been easy to get your hands on a latex hood. And so we have to wonder, who do we know that makes masks out of latex?
True.
Tommy fucking Jarvis, that's who. And we never hear about Tommy bitching about the fact that someone's taken one of his masks, or even why he'd make a Jason hood to begin with, you know, officially, unless he's got something to do with what's going on.
True, but, I mean, he had a lot of masks, so, I mean, the possibility of him overlooking one getting taken, I know he was real, real touchy about them, but, I mean, I think it's very possible he could have overlooked one being taken, and as far as him making one that would fit the get-up for Jason and stuff, I mean, coping mechanism, I don't know.
Let me ask you this, just to play devil's advocate here. Okay, supposing Roy's not a newbie on the job and, you know, in that area as a paramedic. Remember when Matt tells, you know, what happened to the father? Oh, well, he took off someplace, I guess. Is it possible that years earlier, after part four, because, you know, Tommy had all kinds of shit in his room. Is it possible that he took possibly a unfinished mask of Tommy's that had the hood part to it and, you know, took that? Because when Tommy shows up at Pinehurst, he's only got, what, like four or so masks that he pulls out of that bag?
Right.
So maybe Roy shows up, you know, and, you know, maybe he's already a little batshit crazy.
Wait a second. Are you insinuating that Roy might be the father of Tommy Jarvis? Is that
no,
what
no? I'm saying, is it possible that Roy was one of the paramedics that showed up at the end of four to help clean up their bodies?
Okay,
and
okay.
He goes into Tommy's room and sees perhaps a hood or an unfinished mask or something like that to that extent, and he takes it for whatever reason. And then, you know, when he sees his son that got killed, that's the thing that makes him snap, and he's got this. Is kind of like a souvenir, just like you had mentioned earlier in a previous episode, that with all these killings going on, you know, that you know, Crystal Lake would have been like a tourist attraction. You know, people would have been, you know, wanting, you know, people be selling masks and shit all kinds of stuff. Is it possible that Roy, you know, grabs something that could have been evidence or whatever from Tommy's, maybe not evidence, but something from Tommy's room that he thought was in a weird way that, you know, kind of, I don't know, something that he wanted to take from that scene. And that's what he wore in part five.
That's not a terrible point. I mean, but
about the point of him taking the hood or whatever, the latex hood. I mean, maybe it's just something as simple as after whatever happened to Joey, you know, him knowing that if he could get away with all that in part five, all the killings and stuff, you know, anybody saw him, you know, they're going to attribute it to Jason Voorhees. You know what I mean? So, you know, maybe it's just something as simple as after everything happened with Joey, he just found it and stole it. I mean, he's killing like kids off and shit. So, I mean, he probably wouldn't be above stealing a mask.
So let's talk about that final scene. And specifically when Tommy comes into the barn and is confronting, quote unquote, Jason. Now, Tommy knows what the fuck Jason looks like. And presumably the image of the Jason mask would be forever burned into his skull.
Yeah,
and
yet, he would know it more than anybody.
And yet when he faces Roy in the barn, he is not looking at the same mask as he did all them years ago. And plus, Roy hesitates when he sees Tommy coming to the barn. And Oz, I think this is a point you brought up, like, offline in a conversation a while back. But, like, the dynamic between the two in that one instance is, like, it's just, like...
Well, what I brought up was that, you know, they did a really good job of showing how Tommy, you know, bettered himself as far as, I mean, he was a badass in this movie. I mean, he kicked the shit out of several, you know, people in this movie. I
mean, they hurt me, Ma!
Yeah, they hurt me! And I mean, especially, you want to go back to how he is about his masks. I mean, look at Eddie, man, he's just goofing off and he freaking hip-tossed him on a table and just beat the piss out of him. So, I mean... You know, they kind of build you up that where, you know, you think that, you know, if he were to go toe to toe with Jason, I mean, he's gonna at least be able to hold his own. I mean, they've done that characters before, but he hesitates when he sees Roy. I mean, even though he says Jason, Roy walks up to him and he just stands there. I mean, he doesn't do anything, and he just lets Roy slice his freaking chest open with a machete. So, I mean. That's what first got me wondering, you know, is it a possibility that these two were, you know, possibly in on it together? And then, you know, when it comes down to it and it's the final chase scene and everything, and, you know, Roy's been fucked up and run over by a buck backhoe and everything else. I mean, you know, maybe he does that thinking he's going to kill Tommy because he doesn't want any, he's tying up a loose end.
That's a legitimate point.
I mean, he did a piss poor job of it. I mean, as good as he killed everybody else, he just kind of freaking sliced. Although, you know, Tommy did hit him in the fucking groin area with a pocket knife.
And that's what's silly to me. Like, Roy is not Jason. He's a fucking mortal. And yet he's taking blows like Jason. I don't... that's a conversation for something else. But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
He was
tonight,
a paramedic. He did have access to drugs that could possibly, you know, a little PCP. He probably wouldn't have felt no shit until the next day or two.
That's a fair point. He could have been hopped up on some fucking speed or some shit. Or, I don't know, something to dull the pain. He would have had to have been.
He could have been a, you know, maybe that's why him and Joey's mother didn't work out, because he was freaking wigging out on PCP all the time, fucking listening to freaking Steve Miller Band. Who knows? I mean, again, this is all speculatory and we're having fun, so anybody who has a problem with it can fuck off.
Especially you, Jim Elliot.
AKA. I do have one thing to add, as far as the, not necessarily if they were in cahoots or not, there is another possibility that I kind of entertained and was kind of debating, and, you know, on my own, was if they weren't in cahoots, is it possible? And when I went back and watched this movie before the part five show, I was looking for anything that would substantiate or make me believe in any of these theories. And I really didn't find anything, but it's still fun to, you know, throw them out there. Is it possible that some of the kills weren't Roy and some of them actually were Tommy?
Oh yeah,
that
they weren't necessarily in cahoots, but is you know, possibly you know when Tommy runs off or some stuff that's going on, maybe there's a kill or two in there that Tommy actually did then that Roy got credit for. Because what made me think that is because they're you know they're building up for Tommy to be the killer in part six, obviously, and I think that would have been a really really cool bridge from five to six to come back and find out that, you know, he didn't just become the killer in part six. He actually took out a couple of the people that Roy got credit for.
That's not a bad point. And I could see that happening. But basically anything, the only kills that I could see that, Tommy could quite possibly get credit for are ones done with the bare hand. I can't see Tommy using a weapon on anybody. I mean, at least you don't see that.
Well, what about at the end?
Well, we don't know.
Are you talking about with Pam?
Oh, yes.
Because we haven't watched part six yet.
Very true. I've never seen it, ever.
I mean,
so which kills do you think could possibly have been credited to Tommy if that were the case?
The only one right off the top of my head would be the kill with the guy with the tourniquet against the tree.
Well, if that's the case, then he had to have killed Tina too.
What, with the fucking shears?
Yeah.
Then no, I can't attribute. I right off the top of my head, I'm saying I can't attribute any of them to Tommy, to be honest with you. If I'm going under the assumption that he would have used his bare hands and not anything else.
Well, I mean, who's to say he'd use his bare hands? I mean, he had access to
I get that. I'm just going on like I'm theorizing based on what you see Tommy do in the movie, and you don't see Tommy using weapons. You know, when you piss him off or freak him out, he just beats the shit out of you with his bare hands.
Yeah. And that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
The only kills maybe that he could get credit for, even if you disregard the fact that he didn't use weapon or, you know, you never see him use weapons, is maybe Junior and Ethel. You might be able to give him credit for those, maybe, because Junior had already provoked him, and maybe at some point there wasn't anybody there to stop him from completing, from, you know, going further. I don't know. Those are the only two that I could see him being a part of.
Yeah, and I thought too about possibly, you know, Demon and his girlfriend, but then I thought, no, he took off running. He would have had to circle back to take them out, so...
Yeah.
You don't think he could have killed the Peeping Tom that was watching? Well, then, I mean, all three of those kills had to be the same person, I think. Tina, yep. Eddie, and the pervert. This probably had to all be the same person. Otherwise, they're going to run into each other.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. The only, I mean, honestly, I wanted to talk about this, and the only real link I could see between Tommy and Roy was the fact that Roy was wearing a hood. And there's no good explanation for that, especially when you have a dude in the film who makes fucking masks. Now, if Tommy didn't have that hobby, we wouldn't even be talking about this. But since Tommy has that hobby, it's a question for the ages, son.
Right. And it's fun to you know, explore that possibility, even if it is an awful theory. Yeah, an awful theory that we'll never have the answer to or be able to prove or disprove. So, but it's fun to dissect these movies and come up with shit like that. And if you don't think that's okay, then tough shit.
Fuck you, buddy.
That's right.
Well, all right, let's get into some listener mail. But before we do, let's hear from another show on the Tangent Bound Network.
Bubblegum and kick ass.
And I'm all out of bubblegum!
Astro Radio Z is a horror, cult, exploitation film podcast hosted by me, Derek Carey. I was one of those monster kids growing up. the one that used to sit in the back end of that video store and scour over every single last film cover you saw back there, from the slashers to the monsters to the sleazy stuff. Yeah, I was freaking obsessed, and I still am. So much so, I became a filmmaker myself. Now I bring on all my filmmaker friends, critics, musicians, and any other fans of the dark arts, which are horror, exploitation, and cult film. Are you one of these people? Then tune in and listen to my show, Astro Radio Z.
We got an email not too long ago, and it was about Freddy versus Jason. And initially, I was gonna wait until we got to that movie to address it, but fuck it. We'll go ahead.
It'll be a long time coming.
I know, at the rate we're going.
But that's a good thing.
I know, right? We got a lot of content for our peoples.
Right. I mean, although we do want to get to the movies and talk about them, some more than others. if we could skip to Freddy versus Jason, I'd be happy about that.
No, we cannot do that. All right. So Jimmy Ferrari, if that is in fact your real name, he says, okay. And Freddy versus Jason, Freddy realizes at a certain point in the film that Jason's weakness is the water. He's scared of water. If this is true, which I don't think it is, unless Freddy versus Jason is a standalone movie and the rest you can throw out, but don't feel it is. Maybe, but I don't feel it is. Then let's go back to the final chapter. He wouldn't hide under the water only to jump out of it in order to hold Sam still, in order to stab her from underneath the raft, only to wait in the water for Paul to go after Sam to get a harpoon to the nuts. In part 6, if he was scared of water, Jason wouldn't, without hesitation, walk directly into the lake after Tommy until the water is above his head. In part 8, he would not basically swim underwater to the boat in order to board it from the side. Why the inconsistencies with Jason being either afraid of it or not? His final resting place and blah, blah, blah. What's your take? Is he scared shitless of the damn water or not?
Well, my take is, first, we haven't seen part 6 or part 8 yet, so I don't know. Spoiler alert there, pal. No, I totally agree. I think it's a plot loophole, or I don't know, plot omission, or I don't know. They had to come up with something, and I don't know. It doesn't make sense in the continuity of all the other movies, but I don't know. I think they had to come up with something that Freddy had over Jason, and that's all they came. That's all they could come up with, as weak as that shit is.
I don't know about that. I mean, and I emailed him back, and I basically pointed out the idea that maybe the fear of water was a fear in Jason and his deep subconscious. And then, you know, because in Freddy versus Jason, the time that you see Freddy, you know, trying to exploit that fear in Jason, Jason is in the dream state. So basically, Freddy could, you know, pretty much look around Jason's fucking mind and really get into the heart of what scares Jason. And I basically come away with the idea that deep in Jason's subconscious, he's still afraid of the water. I mean, he fucking died in it. Maybe he died in it.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. And, you know, another way to look at it, too, and this just occurred to me, is possibly maybe Jason's afraid of water when he's not, when he doesn't feel like he's in control.
Maybe.
You know? Like when in part 4, where he's killing these people, and in part 6, he was in control. He went into the water on his own. He had a clear vision and what an intent on what he was doing. And like you said, in Freddy versus Jason, he's asleep, and he's, you know, Freddy's really manipulating Jason through the entire movie. So yeah. maybe you're right, and it's the subconscious fear of water, yes, but also combined with the fact that he's not entirely in control as he has been before.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. That is a real good point.
See, we're not stupid.
And that's, you know, that's me agreeing with a fucking off-the-wall dumbass theory. So, you know, that's just a cliche of this show, I guess.
Well, you know, we have what we have, you know.
All right, so Ronald Franzen, I hope that's how you pronounce your last name, sir. He wrote a lot, but I'll just read the intro paragraph so we can talk about it, because he answered all the questions, evidently. All this stuff is up for debate, but the only way that makes sense, and he's talking about part two here, but the only way all that makes sense is the window scene is a dream sequence. Do you remember when Paul picks up Jenny after the massive cut on her leg? I believe this is where she blacks out. I believe Jason attacks them again, and they never make it into the cabin that this scene takes place in. The reporter in part three says Jenny survived multiple stab wounds, but she only has one cut in her leg in the movie, so she must have been stabbed again. That is a fair fucking point, and I know.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I know when we did that episode, I was vehemently arguing against it being a dream sequence.
Because that's basically
could not have been with you, motherfucker, because you weren't even on the show then.
Well, I mean, we did have discussions about two before, not on that episode, obviously.
fair enough.
But no, that's been my interpretation of part two all along, is that, you know, that the dream sequence wasn't just when they get back and, you know, Muffin miraculously, you know, is back to, you know, walking around and shit after.
Yeah, but you don't know that that's Muffin, dude. You don't know that it is. I mean, it's a mangled piece of fur that sort of looks like a dog, like you know, the same color fur that Muffin had.
Well, but Terry even refers it that night. So maybe Muffin will come back because Muffin's missing.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I think the thing that they found in the woods or whatever that was assumed to be Muffin was kind of like a red herring and shit, you know?
Sure.
It's just, you know, it's there to make you think, you know what I'm saying? Oh, shit, he killed the dog too. What a dick. But maybe he didn't.
I mean, I could see from one sense how that could be a dream sequence, okay? And it would better provide continuity between the way Jason looks in parts two and three. And if you take my theory that the whole thing happened in real time, in real life, everything happened, no dreams, you could still account for the multiple stab wounds, because you don't know what happened to, you know, happened to Jenny and Paul after Jason busts through the window. I mean, it could be, well, obviously Jason attacked Jenny again. You don't know what he did. And plus, if that wasn't a dream sequence, then Paul fought him off and died in the process. Had to have. So she could have sustained more stab wounds after the window scene to account for what the reporter says in part three. Although that still doesn't go
that,
on to...
That would hold the same amount of merit as wounds that she would have sustained from Jason back, you know, after she left the shack. I mean, they're both... They're just in different times and different, you know.
Yeah, my theory does not account for the differences in the way Jason looks between part two and part three. So,
right.
I mean, I guess if you want to make the two movies agree, then yeah, I mean, you're right. That last scene has to be a dream.
I also don't think, honestly, personally, I don't really subscribe to the fact that or the theory that Jenny was attacked beyond the shack in part two before she wakes up, because partly because of the way part three starts off. I mean, Jason's still laying in the shack and he takes the machete out of his shoulder. So, I mean, unless he made his way back to the shack and passed out and then takes the machete out later after Jenny, you know, gets to wherever, I mean, and passes out, or I don't know. I mean, I look at it as the whole thing was a dream, and Jason never left the shack, and Paul didn't either.
I don't know. I mean, as far as like the whole idea of it being a dream sequence or whatever, like I was saying a minute ago, that could account for the difference in appearance there, because, you know, with them having the conversation about him being grown and everything earlier in the movie. And then, like, it could have just been something that was worked up in her head, and then when she was out, you know, that's just what she dreamed up or whatever. But I really don't know how to – I don't really have any way to get into it any further. I'm just saying, I mean, The difference in appearance could only really, in my head, be attributed to her being out when it happened. Now, as far as her being the whole multiple stab wound thing, her being attacked and whatnot again, I mean, it's entirely possible that, you know, it, you know, if it did happen and somehow, like, I don't know, Jason's not one for making mistakes usually, but he just thought she was dead. I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's hard to say, man. And this is what sucks in trying to make these two movies agree. I mean, because there's so much difference in the way Jason looks and even to some point how he acts between the two movies.
Well, in part two, obviously, he's still in his serial killer youth. You know, he's just learning how to get shit done. I mean, now, for the most part, he's pretty effective, but, you know.
But again, though, part three happens the day after part two, so he would still be in that mode.
He's a quick learner. He's like, that bitch kicked me in the fucking nuts, and that shit ain't happening again.
I mean, you could be right, maybe.
I'm not diving 6 feet on top of somebody and missing and breaking ribs again.
That's why he used the harpoon in part three. Keep his distance.
Right. Right, I ain't standing on no wicked rickety ass chairs anymore either.
Somebody got him with the gag chair. look at this dumbass.
You see all that? You hear all this fake laughter going on right now?
Totally fake.
All right, and from the site, I just had to mention this. We just got this comment today. And nice. it was from Doug Myers, and I'm not gonna address it because it's just awesome that he said this. There's those witty titles. Wow, for a very minor character, he was pretty entertaining. And he's talking about our episode with Billy from Part Five, which is I think episode 19.
I believe it is.
It is.
Yes, it is. he says, keep up the good work. When I got to work this morning, dreading this day, I actually felt better when I thought, ooh, at least there should be a new Camp Blood podcast. True story.
Nice.
I had to end it like that.
See, now those are the people that we do the show for. Yeah. Not for the jerk offs that are gonna listen and then act like they're such, you know, our show's such shit. But they tend to listen every freaking episode and then want to pick us apart over dumb shit.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, you know, we did ask for an honest critique, although I don't think that review was an honest critique.
Exactly.
He had a fucking axe to grind. But anyway, let's get what are your final thoughts before we close out the show tonight, gentlemen, on the idea that Roy and Tommy may or may not have been in cahoots with each other?
I'll say, I don't think there's anything really throughout the movie, anything really concrete tying them together. I mean, anything you could come up with for the most part, you know, suggesting that they were working together, either, you know, intentionally or just like the point made earlier that maybe just it was kind of accidentally. They were both killing people off and they got attributed to Roy. I don't think there's anything concrete to support that idea. I mean,
no, there's not. There's not. I looked for it. You know, the way I interpret the film is that it was all Roy, but like I said before, I think it's fun to kind of, you know, to talk about the what ifs, and it just gives you something else to think about. That's the way I look at it.
All right. So, as always, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever the fuck you listen to this show at. Thank you, Jim Rock Hardcore, for the 5-star review in iTunes. And fuck you, Jim Elliott, for the 1-star. If you want to support the show financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. Send your questions and theories to our Facebook page or tweet at us at Camp Blood Pod. You can also send an email to feedback@campbloodpodcast.com. You can also text or leave us a voicemail at 757-637-0216. And also, please consider checking out some of the other shows in the Tangent Bound Network, like the network's flagship show, the Tangent Bound Podcast, the Dead as Hell Horror Podcast, or the Hateful Dead. You can find these shows and many more at TangentBoundNetwork.com. Our intro and outro music was provided to us by the Downriver Rat. Check out his music at TheDownriverRat.com.
I'm sure that asshole yeah. think it wasn't.
Thanks, one star guy. Jim Elliott, motherfucker.
I mean, even
all of our shitty reviews and emails from here forth, where your name is Jim Elliott from now on. It doesn't matter what your name is, that's your name.
Hey, I didn't mention a name, I just said asshole.